questions. The first is Claudio Sternberg, who is lecturing cultural studies at the University of Leeds. Together with Daniela Berghahn, she's coordinated the international research network Migrant and Diasporic Cinema in Contemporary Europe. Her research and publications have focused on screenwriting, Black, Asian, and Jewish British literature, film and television, and media representations of the First World War since 1919. Claudia.
Okay, thank you very much. Good afternoon. The recently released West is West and the earlier East is East belong to a few British productions that deviate from the general practice of locating diasporic narratives in the present and draw the viewer's attention to earlier periods. Historical fiction and historical realism, understood here as including references to events and socio-political developments, historicize experiences and render them timeless. They educate spectators on what was, but also familiarize them with characters, fictional or not, with whom they may be relationally connected through generation, space, name, tradition, national or other myth. In stories involving migration and diaspora, this familiarization is enhanced by a multiplicity of histories and spatial connections, as well as the pleasure of self and hetero recognition offered to diverse audiences in various locations of a larger diaspora space. Familiarization is defined as to render accustomed, to divest of strangeness, to make a person or oneself well acquainted, to feel at ease, at home with. These meanings are shared etymologically and conceptually with family, the preferred and perhaps ideal carrier and mediator of such meaning in narrative representation. At the outset, I would like to propose that West is West, as period drama, familiarizes audiences with a transcultural, transnational, and transgenerational history of Anglo-Pakistani relations. It achieves this through a narrative whose complexity, interest, and topicality is not derived, as some critics would like to have it, from the overdetermined discourses of terrorism, fundamentalism, disaffected Muslim youth, Islamophobia, or the failing state of Pakistan. Rather, it builds on, I quote, the role of the family as an intermediate level institution mediating structure and agency in migration between Pakistan and Britain. As sociologists Kaveri Harris and Alison Shaw point out, access to migration, power, or other resources is shaped by the socioeconomic status of the family. In addition, they argue, there exist internal hierarchies of the family in which access to migration is distributed along gender and generational lines. End of quote. As West is West is both historical and autobiographical, I'm interested in the way it uses family, socioeconomic status, gender, and generation to facilitate the viewer's understanding of a social reality that underlies and informs the narrative. West is West's telling of the transnational family story remains cinematic, of course, and is significantly aided by the popularity of East is East and the subsequent sequelizing effect. Carolyn Jess Cook defines the sequel as a framework within which formulations of repetition, difference, history, nostalgia, memory, and audience interactivity produce a series of dialogues and relationships between the textual predecessor and its continuation, between audience and text, and between history and remembrance. In her words, a sequel usually performs as a linear narrative extension, but also operates as an ancillary narrative by developing plot lines and characters, moving in diverse narrative trajectories, repeating key themes and characteristics, and generally acting as a commentary upon the original. End of quote. A sequelizing structure is also found in the family, with generation following generation, a sense of continuation and repetition in linear succession. At the same time, the family embodies the paradoxes of the sequel, with references back to earlier incarnations, legacies, and heritages, non-linear developments and parallel histories, counterfactual musings, and other critical commentary. If complicated further by diasporic time and place, multilinguality, and other splits, rural, urban, secular, religious, white, brown, Christian, Muslim, genealogies become intricate. In the following sections, I will address some of these operations on the diegetic level, but I will sketch the linear storyline of the sequel first. So West is West is set in 1975, 4 years later than East is East, and George Khan continues his ill-fated quest of increasing his son's sense of Pakistaniness and finding marriage partners with a Pakistani background. Of the last two sons who live in the Khan's Salford family home, Munir has been sent to Pakistan, where he stays with George's first wife, Bashira, her daughters Rehana and Roshana, Rehana's husband, Popa Tanvir, and further extended family. Ella's and George's youngest son, Sajid, is a teenager who suffers racist bullying at school and responds by playing truant, shoplifting, and rejecting his Paki father. He is taken to Pakistan by George himself for some alternative values and educational settings. George resumes his role as a family patriarch and landowner and has a new house built on the Khan compound. Sajid, initially reluctant to engage with his new environment, becomes appreciative of the people and culture around him with the help of an old Sufi sage, Pir Nasim, and Zaid, a boy of his own age. Sajid sets out to find a wife for his brother Munir and succeeds in matching him up with Neelam, an Asian Briton who poses as an eligible village girl. In the meantime, Ella Khan and her friend Annie have also arrived in Pakistan, paying an unexpected visit because George is overstaying his agreed time away and taking money out of their Salford account. East and West meet and celebrate Munir's and Neelam's traditional wedding in the village, then the Westerners return to the north of England. Despite the difference of 4 years, West is West is constructed to complement East is East. The sequel renders visible what was only vaguely referred to in the original and would usually be absent from European diasporic skin narratives. West is West takes the viewer to the other place, Pakistan, and the other language, Punjabi, and most significantly to the other Khans and the kinship group around it. The latter turn out to be diverse in terms of occupation, education, and notably mobility. A number of male characters have been to the UK for a longer or shorter period and speak some English. The women, on the other hand, unless born and raised in the diaspora like Neelam, have neither access to migration nor are they bilingual. If their husbands migrate, and by the 1980s about 10% of Pakistan's adult manpower worked abroad, not only in Britain but mainly in the Gulf states, they have to wait for a strictly regulated family reunion or, as in the case of Bashira, face the hardship of being left behind. One of the core complementary interests then in the sequel is the representation of the impact of George's emigration on his first family. George left his wife Bashira and two daughters in the late 1930s and travelled by ship to Britain without money and luggage. As many other lone male migrants, he supported his family by sending money in the form of remittances, and he maintains the practice even after he has founded a second family with his English wife, Ella. Lauren Engel points out that, quote, when examining the remittance phenomenon, it is important to note that the asset is not just sent back to the home country, but it is sent back and received with a purpose and often with directions, end of quote. Like most remittance recipients, Bashira is a woman, and it is the absentee husband and absentee father who determines that the money is invested in the acquisition of more land. The consequence of this common practice is that even after 35 years, Bashira and the two daughters have no modern conveniences. They continue to carry out labor-intensive domestic tasks like preparing the grain, fetching water for humans and animals, and mixing up cow dung into fuel patties for cooking. The Western notion of accumulating capital or property overrides any other investment based on need. In an earlier scene, George presents the family with Western souvenirs after his absence of 35 years. Money and consumer goods stand in for intimacy and personal relationships. They serve a symbolic function because George retains a link and the right to return, despite having shed his responsibilities for wife, children, land and animals, and the local community. Remittance culture does not, however, only affect spouse and children. A marital bond with Rihanna has empowered Papa Tanvir to act as the male head of the Khan household in Pakistan during George's absence. This position is threatened, however, by the presence of Munir, Sajid, and George himself. In a pivotal scene, a demasculated Papa Tanvir tries to establish his independence by drawing attention to his own family's land and to lay claim to George's role because it was he who worked the land and improved it. But George has the upper hand in this neo-colonial dependency. He makes investments at will, maintains a local workforce, and can return and reclaim as he pleases. Papa Tanvir runs the risk of being degraded to a Gar Damand, a house son-in-law, a figure of ridicule in South Asia who cannot assert his authority in the marriage because of clashes with his father-in-law. George dismisses his son-in-law's intervention and throughout the film never connects with his daughter. At the same time, he valorizes and romanticizes the idea of the family working together in conversations that he has with Sajid. George is unaware of the threat he and his English-born sons pose to Papa Tanvir, Rihanna, and Roshana. He remains ignorant of the resistance to his plan to match his sons with young Pakistani women, and that Papa Tanvir and Rihanna feed into the local family's anxiety that they will either lose their daughters to migration or that the history of abandonment will repeat itself. West is West can be seen as entering further into dialogue with East is East. Because it subverts linearity. The emphasis shifts from the second generation to the first. By moving forward in time to Pakistan in 1975, the film also takes the viewer back to George's pre-migratory life and the hitherto untold parts of his migration history. In East is East, he tells his children about his first exploits as a newly arrived migrant in England in the 1930s. The sequel's location prompts him to disclose facts about his younger self, when he was still called by his Asian name, Jahangir, which is also the name of one of the once mighty and modern Mughals. The young Jahangir had been mocked by his own father for his teenage wanderlust and had not dared follow his desire until after he had settled with a wife and two children. George's utopian family ideal does not exist and never has. 35 years later, he comes to realize that repressed guilt for his own actions and behavior was buried under nostalgic idealizations. Acknowledging his shame, George manages to at least partially accept the criticism he receives from his children, wives, and members of the community, and to face up to his crisis of midlife and the irrationality of remigration. The migration regime that favors male mobility replicates the social regime that favors male agency. As the anthropologist Miriam Seitzen states, male migration can be one of the culturally and socially acceptable reasons for taking a second wife. And it is this situation Bashira and Ella find themselves in. They are co-wives, and within the cultural context, the legitimate partners of George. In East is East, wife number one was a figure of speech and of ridicule. But West is West not only brings Bashira to the screen, but also constructs an encounter between her and Ella, wife number two. For Ella, wife number one is no longer the woman in the attic or in a faraway place. For Bashira, the English wife who gave birth to six sons becomes a person in flesh and blood. But the two wives have little interest in jealousy as they quickly recognize their similar gendered positions. Bashira is dependent on two male figures, the remittance husband abroad and the son-in-law who supports her daughter and her land. She was not able to remarry, and no additional husband could be found for her second daughter. Her life pattern resembles that of widowhood. Ella, like other English women who intermarried, experiences the loss of her mixed-race children, either through alienation, banishment, or marriage and relocation. She has also been the target of racism as a consequence of her trans-ethnic marriage and trans-racial motherhood. Her only support is Annie, who represents Ella's kinship, indicating isolation from Ella's own family and full immersion into the male-dominated reality of the British Asian Muslim community. The sequel empowers both women through Ella's journey to Pakistan and Bashira's gesture of female solidarity. She approaches Ella, uses her voice and physical contact. She also sends George away. The experiential common ground enables the two women to communicate across ethnic, linguistic, religious, and lifestyle difference. They come together over the broken image of married life. This is Ella. And at least privately contribute to a new understanding of transnational, transcultural, and transethnic relations that benefits at least the younger generation. Under their auspices, the Khan compound with its two families, two houses, two wives, becomes the site of a new understanding of kinship and family, at least temporarily. The examples given so far could be fleshed out in a number of levels, dialogue, cinematography, and I apologize that I can't show you any clips, but we will see some later. The examples were meant to illustrate the sequel's linear extensions and the complementary or synthesizing branching out of narrative trajectories. The purpose has been to color in schematic contours of characters or make otherwise specific what has been alluded to in East is East. Another effect that has been to enable a critical commentary along gender and generational lines. I would like to close with a final example that connects in a somewhat speculative manner the diegetic level with the authorial level. Just like Sajid, the young boy, screenwriter and dramatist Ayub Khandin visited Pakistan as a teenager in the 1970s, but his autobiographically informed fiction significantly deviates from his own rather bland experience. Khandin makes use of the narrative strategy of pairing and doubling throughout West is West, but he specifically develops the cinematic trope of surrogate fatherhood to externalize Sajid's growing awareness of the trans nationality of his family and an appreciation of a critical diasporic position. Khandin, as a boy in Pakistan, had seen but not engaged with the man on whom the character of Pir Nasim is based. Pir Nasim encourages Sajid to discover for himself his environment with his traces of ancient civilization, traditions, and community festivals, and his own place in it, historically, generationally, and relationally. As a spiritual leader, rather than an unreflecting disciplinarian, Pir Nasim is a more credible model and more interesting companion. His non-patronizing pedagogic is also more effective than Sajid's school teacher's celebration of a bygone Raj while being or acting oblivious to the threat of racist youth. Furthermore, Pir Nasim represents a more modern Pakistani who challenges the conservative tendency of transnational and diasporic communities, as embodied by George as well as the Malvi and other Anglo-Pakistanis in East is East. Pir Nasim also shows Sajid that it is possible to know, acknowledge, and enjoy Roger Kipling's novel Kim, which is also which has a special role in West is West and also includes surrogacy and pairing of a boy and a priest. Pir Nasim approaches the novel from a post-colonial perspective, and Sajid becomes a more confident young man and a young man whose sense of heritage develops alongside his self-affirmation as British Asian. My last picture. Jess Carolyn Cook, with reference to Freud's Beyond the Pleasure Principle, suggests a similar repetition compulsion that underlines sequelization, insofar as the sequel taps into a particular cultural urgency to memorialize, interact with, and perhaps alter the past. West is West makes it possible for Khandin to restage his own experience in Pakistan and retell the story so that his characters can anticipate what fashioned a robust and distinctive identity in the 1970s and 80s, an identity that would eventually become to be labeled, not by the Salford working class, I hasten to add, black and Asian British or mixed race identities that are grounded in a diasporic and or post-colonial consciousness. A cultural urgency may indeed be anchored in the period of the film's making. East is East had been understood, praised, and critiqued as a product of the 1990s, in which ethnic diversity, especially South Asianness, had been seen as delightful, liberating, and normalizing, and appreciated by crossover and international audiences. West is West, on the other hand, is not only a sequel, and thus per se a lesser work in the eyes of many critics, but will be read in the post-9/11 mode with which any representations of or from diasporic Muslim culture are approached. It may be appropriate, therefore, to highlight the period's emancipatory struggles and the coming into representation of black and Asian Britons.